Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. New Mexico was hit with a major scandal in 2013 when the state announced the discovery of $36 million in fraudulent Medicaid overbillings, forcing it to freeze, it said, all payments to 15 behavioral health providers. Just recently, the scandal was reignited when our attorney general determined there wasn't $36 million in fraudulent overbillings. Actually, there were no fraudulent overbillings. To help us make sense of this, we invited Senator Jerry Ortiz y Pino, who is a former social worker himself and who held hearings all around the state about the behavioral health crisis that resulted from the freeze. Senator Jerry Ortiz y Pino, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Steve.
Senator, I'd like to start with sort of the overview of this whole thing, which in my mind makes no sense, and that is just the allegation that there's $36 million in fraudulent overbillings by all these different health care providers just strikes me as completely ludicrous. I mean, you could have one or maybe two engaging in fraud, possibly, but all 15, it just seems absurd right from the go.
Yeah,
so why would a business-friendly administration do this to these 15 providers who is bringing all this money into the state from the feds?
Well, yeah, the amount of money coming in was going to be the same anyway. So that they still were going to get the same amount of money coming in. And I think what happened is that the company that had the contract before to manage it, Optum Healthcare, they had already been told, we're not going to have a special contract for behavioral health. When we start the new program, Centennial Care, which started in January of 2014, when we start that, we're going to have a totally different approach, and we're going to integrate the behavioral health services with the primary care services and the long-term care services. And I think the new companies that were going to get these new contracts.
Now, and that, those were Arizona companies.
Well, what I meant is the managed care organizations that were going to get the Medicaid contracts.
I see.
We're saying we don't think we can make any money if we have to deal with these 15 big providers in New Mexico. We'd rather have companies that we feel comfortable with, that we've worked with in the past, and here's some companies that you could talk to in Arizona. And I think actually the sequence was they went out and talked to the Arizona companies.
They being the state
the
and
state
Optum, right?
And Optum both, that's yeah. Right. They went on to Arizona before they had actually done the audit that they claim is the basis for getting rid of the New Mexico companies. It was a reverse process. They decided they were going to contract with Arizona companies rather than the New Mexico companies. The amount of money was going to be the same, but it would be a lot easier to tell the Arizona companies what to do and how to do it because the New Mexico companies had been here a long time and were very well entrenched in the communities and felt comfortable saying, no, we won't do that, and then running to the press or to the legislature and complaining. They figured there was no way to make money on a program like that. We need to have companies that feel comfortable taking no for an answer from us.
So you brought up the audit. And let's talk a little bit about this. And in general, what happened was New Mexico actually went out of state and hired an audit company for $3 million, and that fairly tidy sum. I mean,
sure.
Some of the agencies in this last year couldn't get $3 million,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, it was an inordinate amount of money for an audit. Keep in mind that the audits were done every year by Optum. They had to do an audit themselves every year on these companies, and all the previous audits had not shown any evidence of that kind of fraud. So when they decided they wanted to get rid of the companies, they hired a company from Massachusetts that came in and gave them the results they had asked for. Their findings were that there had been massive overbilling. But even that company, in its final audit report, said, we saw no evidence of fraud.
Yeah, that's one of the most shocking things. But when you say massive overbillings, I think one of the strangest things about this audit, they went back and they looked at 3 years, apparently, worth of billings.
Yeah.
But they only found $42,000 worth of questionable claims, $1,000 a year of questionable billings over that you found. They said, well, if we found this little amount based on all these billings, then for the total amount, we would find $36
million. Exactly.
So actually, there, $36 million was just a made-up number, wasn't it?
It was a totally made-up number, a total fabrication. And in fact, the company that did the audit didn't back it up with any kind of evidence about how you would extrapolate to that level. The formulas they used aren't borne out by any of the researchers that have taken a look at that. They actually backed into a number. They wanted to get to a high number, and so they backed into it, and there was no way of justifying what they had done.
So I'd like to come back to one thing you said, because I never quite got this. Now, they said, the audit company said, there was no evidence of fraud.
That's right.
But that was in their paperwork,
that
right?
That was in their paperwork, and yet when the agencies asked to see the paperwork, they filed legal request, public request for information. The department released the audit, and they had excised, they had scratched out that frame, that sentence that was blacked out in what was released. And so that was not made public. And yet when they got the actual one later, they realized, well, this is the company that did the audit didn't give you any reason to declare fraud.
So that should have been the end of it, because according to the state, mm-hmm. the state said that they were bound by Medicaid.
Yeah, if there were credible allegations.
Because there were credible allegations of fraud. They had to stop payments to these 15 providers, but actually that wasn't found in the audit. So
not at all.
Again, that's a complete head scratcher.
It's a head scratcher, and to me the thing should have been stopped right there. The Attorney General would have only had to have read that to say to the state, you have not really found credible allegations of fraud sufficient to wipe out 15 agencies from participation in the Medicaid program. But he didn't. He said, well, I'll take a look at it.
And you bring up the Attorney General, so I've got to ask you about Gary King.
Yeah.
Because rather than say what you just said, he fought the disclosure of this audit and continued to support the idea. I mean, he's running against the governor. He's got a great campaign issue. Let's just say he wasn't, at all legitimate. He's got a great campaign issue. But if he is totally legitimate, he would still seemingly reject this. I don't get it, Senator.
I never got it either. And in fact, when you do something that the governor's administration did of this magnitude to cause this much of a problem for the state and for the mentally ill and drug addicted and alcoholic people in the state who need treatment, you should have been held accountable at least in the upcoming election. But then she had an opponent who had agreed with her enough that it never even got mentioned during the election.
It was never mentioned.
It was never an item that was debated or raised or questioned.
So one other thing about this so-called audit, which they wouldn't allow the companies to see what the questionable billings were. And what kind of questions were raised?
That there were clients who were seen and the account codes that were the agency used in submitting the billings were inaccurate, the wrong codes. They were asking payment for the wrong thing. But those were all the kinds of errors that in a very complex system like the Medicaid system, you don't declare fraud and throw them out of the program. You sit down and figure out how come you're using these. You sit down and work with them to try to figure out if you can't improve it. And instead, they just wiped them out. That's why my conclusion was they had already decided they were going to wipe them out. This then became simply a rationale for taking the action that they had done.
We're going to have to take a short break. This is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz. I'm very pleased to finally have Senator Jerry Ortiz de Pino on my program. We're talking about the Medicaid freeze on 15 behavioral health providers, and we'll be back in just a minute. Thank you. We are back. And Senator, you put forth a theory, a speculation, I think you would have said, about why this happened. There's a recent complaint. But what happened was five Arizona companies were brought in. I think two of them that have now left the state?
Two have left, and we hear the third one is notifying the state that they're getting ready to leave.
One of those companies is named La Frontera. They filed a lawsuit just recently, within the last month. They say they have this explanation for what happened, and their explanation is that Optum, the intermediary between the state and the behavioral health providers, was making a mess of its business. Mm-hmm. It was losing money, something along the lines that you said. And it devised an exit strategy. And the exit strategy was they would get the state to believe in that these 15 companies were committing fraud. They would get the payments withheld. Those companies would be driven out of business. The Optum would get to keep the $18 million that was owed these 15 companies. And they could go off and at least not lose money in New Mexico. They'd bring these Arizona companies in whose systems dovetailed with theirs, and everything would be hunky-dory. So, very close to your theory.
Yeah, and I don't believe that that could have been Medicaid money, because you can't use Medicaid money to help for something like that. That had to be state or non-Medicaid behavioral health money, which could have been put into the Medicaid program and then matched 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 with Medicaid dollars.
So again, you get this question of, really, of why you would bring in these Arizona companies.
Exactly.
You know, and you start with an audit company out of state. You bring in these out-of-state Arizona companies.
Yeah.
And then the whole basis for the La Frontera complaint is they weren't fully paid as promised. That's right. And the systems didn't mesh.
That which tells me that what we've got really is a problem in how our managed care behavioral health model is set up. They are trying to make money on behavioral health, and I don't think they're ever going to be able to make money unless they do a terrible job of serving the people who have needs. We simply aren't getting the effect of $1 billion. You know, our budget for Medicaid behavioral health this year is almost $1 billion.
No kidding. I had no idea it was that high.
It's $980 million. And if you look around you, and when we did our hearings around the state, we could find little or no evidence of that $980 million being spent effectively. Communities said, the judges, for example, the children's court judges came to testify in Ruidoso and in Las Cruces. And in those instances, they said, you know, when we have a children's court case and it involves a disturbed young person and we want to get help for them, we'll refer them to their Centennial Care managed care company.
Centennial is the new managed care
organization. Yeah, the new name for it, yeah. And they say no. It's not, the kid doesn't need that. That's not medically necessary, so they won't pay for it. All they get is turndowns. They say, well, this kid can't be, you know, there's no purpose in sending this kid to a juvenile jail. What he needs is some kind of treatment. And they say, well, we won't pay for it. You can try a treatment foster home or some less expensive variety of care. It just seems ridiculous that the social workers and the judges in the juvenile justice system or in the Children's Protective Services system came to us saying, can't you make this Medicaid behavioral health system provide the services that they're getting all this money to provide? And when we send kids to them, they're told, no, you can't have those services. I think we've got to take the control of that managed care system back from the companies. There's no reason we shouldn't be running our own behavioral health system. Other states have finally decided to do the same thing. Oklahoma's done it for about 5 or 6 years now, and with good effect. Connecticut is doing that. Other states have started doing that. There's no reason to have this for-profit intermediary in between what the state's clientele, the kids that are our responsibility and their families, need and the services.
So you're distinguishing behavioral health from other kinds. In other words, you would still keep the intermediary with for primary care, but you think, wouldn't for behavioral health.
That's true. That would be my starting point. Let's pull the behavior, because we had that with Optum. You know, it was pulled out. It had a separate contract.
Right.
But we still contracted with a private for-profit company to run it. And there was no reason to do that. We didn't get anything for that step. We lost, in fact.
In fact, I mean, you mentioned Centennial. I've heard from some social workers that they actually are much more approving. I'm not saying they're all that much mm-hmm. approving, mm-hmm. but they're much more approving than Optum was in 2013. Mm-hmm. Is that your impression, too?
It could be. You know, it's really hard to tell because the system has been so radically transformed by the elimination of those 15 largest providers of the services and then the attempt to replace them with either the Arizona companies or now with primary care clinics that are being asked to add behavioral health to their list of services that they provide.
Now, we should probably say that if you've just tuned in, what happened was there were this claim of $36 million in fraud. The only way to sort of basically keep going was if you paid the amount of the alleged claim. So
that's right.
Presbyterian,
yeah.
Like, and these, yeah. these, some of these were, I mean, this is a really established, legitimate behavioral health care.
Yeah.
You know, Presbyterian healthcare. They, I think, paid $4 million.
It was Presbyterian Medical Services, the Northern New Mexico agency.
Yeah.
They paid, I think it was $3 million. But when they paid it, they said, look, we have no doubt that in time we will be proven not to have owed this money at all. But to stay in the program, we are willing to pay the $3 million. And then so they've been able to continue participating in Medicaid during the intervening 2 years. And they're still hoping to get that $3 million back because they don't think there's any evidence that they owed it. But they were willing to just pay it to be able to keep playing.
Just recently, our Attorney General, Balderas, has done an investigation and said there weren't $36 million in fraudulent overbillings. There were actually none. I believe you indicated that I guess 13 of the 15 providers weren't able to pay the claimed amounts and actually had to close their doors and just went out of business mm-hmm. Are they still out of business? Are
well, a couple of them have other kinds of contracts that they do, so they're not totally closed down, but mm-hmm. but their behavioral health program was completely shut down.
So what happens to the therapists and the employees that were working for these companies? You already mentioned that they filed unemployment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of them did get laid off because the companies that came in from Arizona, some of them brought their own administrative mm-hmm. staff and some of their own therapy, direct service staff.
Mm-hmm.
But a few of them did get hired by those companies that came in. They were able to keep their
jobs. So why would you hire the fraudsters, right? If there was $36 million dollars
yeah,
in fraud,
that was,
these would have been the people doing
exactly.
the fraud.
Exactly. Yeah, the shadow of guilt was so heavy over them that a lot of them didn't get hired by the Arizona companies coming in. But then when the Arizona companies pulled out after a year, it was only a year after they came in that La Frontera pulled out. And they pulled out because they claimed they weren't getting sufficient reimbursement to even keep the bare bones.
They said right from the start they were losing money.
Yeah, that's right. And they were getting more than the New Mexico companies had been getting. So it was pretty clear that this whole thing was imploding. The crazy thing is that the state, even after Balderas' findings, has refused to return any of the not the questioned money, but the money that was legitimately owed for the services offered up until the time that audit was conducted.
Right. And they're even saying that these places owe them more money. In other words, not only will we not return you that money, but you owe us more money.
Yeah. They're just doubling down and hoping that they'll go away. I think this is going to have to be settled by the courts. And I think the courts – I can't envision a scenario in which the courts don't find that the state owes these agencies an awful lot of money.
Yeah, when a state refuses to engage in due process, that's a violation of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
And here, there was actually no due process. Yeah. I mean, there was no process whatsoever. They just said, we're saying you owe this money and we won't tell you why.
They still don't know what they were charged with.
They
You're
still
absolutely
don't know
right.
what they were charged with, right.
Because when they got the audit and the audit says there's no evidence of fraud, then they were declared fraudulent. So they're saying, well, what are we – why are you declaring us fraudulent? And they've never been given a satisfactory
answer. So let's talk about the patients. And I think maybe – you know, I mean, all this is bad. But the tragedy really was what happened to the clients of these 15 providers when these businesses had to shut down.
When we went to Las Cruces and Silver City, Ruidoso and Roswell this summer and held hearings – that Southern Tier is where the two Arizona companies.
So how would you do?
Out.
You would go there, and how
yeah,
would you?
Our health and our interim committee, Health and Human Services interim committee.
Uh-huh.
Once a month, we have a week of hearings in during the summer in a different location.
I see.
And so we had some in Las Cruces. Then we split a week between Roswell and Ruidoso, and we had a couple of days in Silver City, and. In every instance, what we found is the people in the community were saying, we don't know where we go for services now because the agencies they used to provide it aren't here. There just was this huge gap. And then we heard from the department, oh, the numbers are fine. We're seeing as many people through the behavioral health program as ever.
Yeah, they seem to take the Medicaid expansion and compare that to the period when before – under the Medicaid expansion Medicaid grew to 150%, I think, of poverty from what, 120% or something
oh,
like
no,
that?
Oh, no, it was even lower. No, it was like 30% for adults.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For adults, it was
and
like,
adults were eligible,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they seem to be comparing apples and oranges and saying there were
totally.
More. Right.
And so when they give us these numbers, they're just numbers. 80,000 people receive behavioral health services. Well, 80,000 got what? I mean, that could be anything from a – you know, a 20-minute crisis intervention over a phone line to a three-day stabilization, mm-hmm. brief hospitalization. What are you talking about? We can't get any of those bits of information. The interim committee has been stonewalled by the department in its efforts to finding out what's going on in this behavioral health program. We have testimony from the communities that they don't see services being made available. We have anecdotal evidence from people who used to get the services that they can't figure out where to go to get them now. And then we have these numbers that are just kind of pulled out of the ether by the state saying, oh, look at these great numbers. But we don't know what the numbers represent, and they can't explain it to us.
The only thing I found exactly what you're saying in terms of numbers, but there was something from this for the Center for Medicaid for the period July 2013, which mm-hmm. is when this was instituted, the mm-hmm. freeze, to December 2013. Mm-hmm. And they said there was a 25% – the Center for Medicaid said there was a 25% decrease, and I think 10,000 fewer patients were seen during that period than the comparable period the year before. So there obviously there can't be any doubt. At least there was a disruption.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear there was a disruption. And you know, this is one of the dilemmas with behavioral health being a managed care program that's integrated into all the other managed care Medicaid programs. It makes it extremely difficult to tease out the specific information. We used to be able to just look at the Optum budget and know exactly what was going on there. Now it's all pulled into the four big contracts with the four Centennial Care managed care organizations. And we're not going to know what's really going on until we can get those numbers and get to the bottom of it.
So, I mean, just to sort of think about this in terms of the patients, I mean, you're talking about the most vulnerable people in New Mexico. You're yeah. talking about a state that has high rates of mental illness, drug abuse, drug addiction, homelessness.
Suicides.
Mm. Were you able to gather specific or, I guess,
anecdotally information? See, that's what we got. We had a lot of anecdotes. And keep in mind that this is a service in which the relationship between the therapist and the client is that's what goes on.
When you finally get a therapist you trust, that's important.
That's right. And then to find out that, oh, no, we laid them off and we've brought in somebody from Arizona. You can go see him instead. Well, that doesn't work. It doesn't necessarily – this is not furniture being moved around an office, being shuffled from the back room to the front room. This is a human life that was hanging on by a thread but was building some support, and then you pull the support away and say, well, you can go somewhere else and get the support. It doesn't work that way. And I think it's going to take us years to restore the level of service and the level of effectiveness that we had before. Not that it was all that great then. I mean, we were seriously missing some – there were huge gaps in our service system even before this crisis. Now it's I think, a real
– On that optimistic note, I'm afraid to say we're out of time. I would like to thank my guest today, Senator Jerry Ortiz-y Pino. We've been talking about the behavioral health crisis that resulted from the Medicaid freeze in 2013, which has now been shown to be meritless. I would also like to thank my producer, Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. You've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. My name is Stephen Spitz. Podcasts of this show are available on iTunes. Search for Stephen Spitz. Archives of all my past shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.